Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Tim Scheel, and he's written the soundtrack for a really intriguing puzzle game, The Gardens Between. And I've really been looking forward to playing the game and really looking forward to talking with you. So thanks so much for taking some time.
Yeah, no worries, Kate. Hello from Melbourne.
it's so cool that we're able to talk, you know, with all these time zones in between us. And the thing that really got my attention with this game, and I can't remember how it sort of came on my radar screen initially, but the Voxel agents created these amazing videos with your music, and there was like a link on their website to just relax in the gardens between. And I've never seen another studio do that. So as a prelude to the music, I think that was just a really brilliant idea.
Well, I think that might have been my fault. I think, you know, just in the development of the game, I ended up with a lot of music. And I think because it is such a beautiful game, it's not necessarily designed to be a game that is extremely challenging or, you know, a real brain bender, although there's a couple of puzzles in the game that are like that. Yeah, it's true. But, you know, I guess the priority for the developers, for the Voxels, was to make this game feel really special and beautiful, really, in the true sense of the word beautiful, really. So, you know, I think we kind of wanted to showcase that. We knew that we were still a little away from having the game out, but we wanted to give people an idea of what it was going to feel like to play the game. So, and I ended up with essentially an album's worth of music. And it was a really, that experience of putting together those long trailers, essentially. That's what we were calling them internally, the long trailers, because they're 15 minutes each. The process of making the music for that was actually really, really interesting and fun for me, because I got to take a lot of the music that I'd been developing for the game and then send it to a lot of my friends and I got them to record new parts and improvise over the top, some vocals as well, write some kind of fragmented songs around the bits and pieces that I'd started putting together for the game, and ended up with essentially a full album of music, which is incidentally also what will be the game's official soundtrack. So it's fun to do something a bit different.
Yeah, for sure. And to take the time, because so often in a game, the cues are pretty short, just a couple or maybe 3 minutes. And then they're made up of little stems that can kind of loop infinitely, depending on how long it takes the player to do a thing. And so it must have been nice to be able to just spread out. And take as long as you wanted with these.
Yeah, I mean, my background predominantly is as a artist, I guess, or as a musician. I've worked on a few games, but the games that I've worked on, it's been more about providing music that can really set the mood and that almost becomes part of the experience of the game in a way that a lot of those shorter loops that you're talking about don't often feel like. So I guess I was kind of bringing my background to it. So I don't have a traditional kind of video game music background. So I'm only really capable of making music that is, you know, a bit longer and a bit deeper and feels a bit more like an album, I guess. So I kind of approach this game similar to the other games I've worked on, where for me it's about trying to make music that's really perfect for the game, but also trying to provide almost like a listening experience within the game, almost like listening to an album or something like that.
Thank you.
Well, let's back up a little bit, because maybe not everybody knows about this game. The Gardens Between is, it's a collection of memories, it seems like, with these two best friends, Arena and Friend, and they're whisked away to this kind of dreamlike series of islands that are like assembled from things they remember. There's like a VHS recorder and a Mac computer and a wading pool on various islands. And the puzzles are so interesting because you don't control them. They're going to do what they do on kind of a rail. And so the way you control the game and figure out the puzzles is by sort of scrubbing time back and forth. And one of the things that really intrigued me about it, I thought I heard in a couple of the cues that maybe that influenced how you put the tracks together, because it sounded like you were running some things backwards too.
I think that kind of novel mechanic was the thing that really hooked me on working on the game to begin with, that idea of being able to just essentially just grab the whole timeline with your hands and scrub it back and forwards is felt like something I hadn't really seen in a game, or maybe I'd seen something, you know, I've seen a couple of things similar to that, but just never executed quite like they have with this game. So I found that immediately really, really compelling. And then I guess the gut instinct is to somehow play off that with the music or with the sound. So if you're essentially moving the whole world forwards and backwards, I remember that the most obvious idea maybe was to say, okay, well, I'm going to write music for this level, and when you're moving forward, the music is going to play forwards, and when you're moving backwards, the music is going to play backwards. Like, that's that was the most obvious kind of thing to do, and it was one of the first things we tried, but it was funny how that actually distracted from that meditative and beautiful feeling that I was talking about that we were trying to get with this game. Like you mentioned, it really is about these two kids and, well, it's not even about the kids. It's more about, it's a really universal thing, I think, that we can all relate to, is remembering those childhood friendships that we had. When you think about being a kid, and whether it was at school or in the school holidays with your neighbours, or, you know, kids down the park, you know, we all remember, or most of us remember, these special kind of childhood friendships which usually end. Or if they don't end, they transform into something else. So it's like a lost time, really, your childhood and those friendships. So we kind of like that, trying to maintain that feeling, that kind of bittersweet but lovely emotion, really was the priority for me with all of the music. And when we tried that kind of like you know, forwards backwards type music experiment, it just felt kind of gimmicky. It didn't feel worthy of the game. So in the end, what ended up happening was that, yeah, I suppose if you listen into the sound beds, you'll hear some elements go forward and some go backwards, but it's not necessarily related to what's happening on screen. It's more just about trying to maintain this sense of a kind of a low-level surrealism.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the way that the islands are created is so interesting. One of the developers said that the artist was especially inspired by Japanese gardens, where you keep taking things away until it's almost not a garden anymore. And that's what you're left with. And so each of the islands has this kind of assemblage of little bits and pieces of things that were clearly very special to the kids, like a wading pool and the couch with the bowl of popcorn and that kind of thing. And so as you were getting the builds from the designers and stuff, what were some of like the visual cues that you noticed on each island that kind of helped you shape the music for it?
Well, I can't believe how many iterations of this game there really were in development. It was eye-opening for me because the games I've worked on previously, I guess, came together quite quickly and had a very solid aesthetic right from the start. Whereas this game, you know, its colors, its shapes, its everything about it visually has shifted a lot over the last few years. But I guess being able to play off those objects was really fun, not necessarily from the music point of view, but just from a sound effects point of view. All the sound in the game was put together by myself and a sound designer called Daniel Olson. And I think, that challenge of trying to figure out... So you mentioned there is one level where there's a bowl of popcorn on a couch. And as you... Spoiler alert for anyone who's going to play it, but... you know, as you're controlling the timeline and you walk past it, the couch kind of fumbles over and the bowl of popcorn is sprayed everywhere. And so a challenge for us was trying to figure out, just on a technical level, how does that work? Like, not only how does this sound like forwards or backwards, but what does it sound like if you freeze that kind of motion in time, if you stop it halfway through? You know, if you've got, or, you know, another example is there's a few parts in the game where elements of the island start to crumble. So you've got this real sense of, you want a rumbling avalanche, you want this really, you might want a big sound to show that these rocks are all falling apart, but when you're in the middle of a huge sound and you stop it, how do you actually reflect that from an audio perspective? Because that's not a thing that happens in real life. You don't generally have giant, big sounds that just stop. It's quite a weird thing. So I think it was fun trying to address those challenges, and in the end, for Daniel and I, it ended up being kind of a case by case basis of trying to figure out, you know, what is this, how is this going to work? And a lot of the time, it wasn't necessarily, and I think some other game sound designers would probably say the same thing, and it's something that probably comes up in film sound design as well, in that often it's not about trying to create a sound that is the most realistic or the most true to what would happen in real life. It's more about thinking about the effect it's going to have on the player and the listener, and subconsciously how it's going to make them feel. As long as it makes sense, or as often it doesn't actually make sense in any kind of realistic way, but it makes sense emotionally or psychologically. And as long as you don't have a listener ever going, "What's this sound?" Then you're kind of doing the right job, I guess.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing because there are some islands where you get these little sounds of, oh, it's almost like hearing people way down the street splashing in a pool, or
or
the sounds of like hammers tapping when they're on the kind of treehouse level. And it works so well with the music. So did you tune your music or tune the sound effects so that it was like really seamless and nothing popped out that sounded like it wasn't supposed to be there?
Yes and no. Yeah, I guess balancing that kind of ambient sounds with all the other bits and pieces, the recorded instruments and the sampled sounds, and that's part of my creative process. It's kind of always has been, even with the music that I make outside of games. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said that I sat there with a... that I sat for hours and hours and hours to get it absolutely perfect. That's kind of not really my process. My process creatively has always been to sort of throw things together, and if it feels good, then it's working. So I really love that element of the game. It was something that Henrik from Voxel Agents and I spoke about pretty early on, was the fact that these characters are essentially they're existing inside memories, and so to try and get an element of surrealism and an element where you feel like you are inside a memory without necessarily being too hokey about it, that felt like one way you could do it. So if you're exploring a memory that the characters are having of building a treehouse together in their backyard, then maybe you do just have almost floating in the air the sounds of hammers nailing planks together. And it's not something that you can see on screens, but it's just, it's a sonic memory that you're peeking into, I guess. And in the end, I think it feels like that works really well. Most levels, we were able to think of something or come up with some sound that could hover in the background and, yeah, just feel like it was in the air around the garden, essentially.
And it really brings the islands to life, too, because each one of them is unique and it has its own palette and its own set of puzzles and stuff. And the other thing that I've noticed now that you've sent me the tracks, and I don't know if this is the final version of what's going to be the soundtrack, but the thing that I noticed is that they all have this kind of low ambient tone. It's almost like background radiation, and it ties everything together, and it kind of reinforces that sense that you're in a memory or like in a dream.
Yeah, I love kind of long drawn out ambient drones that shift really subtly, but not in a way that necessarily catches your attention. It's that idea of background music that you can kind of listen to for hours and not get tired of. And it's not necessarily a science. It's just about a feeling. But it is, if you kind of hit the right combination of things, you can kind of create a tone or a or a handful of tones working together, or a handful of ambient sounds working together that you can quite happily put on and listen to for 40 minutes, as long as it's shifting enough that on some subconscious level you're not bored. Just a pet peeve of mine in games, and I feel like it's happening less and less now, which is good, and it probably peaked when mobile gaming was really peaking in the first couple of years that it was around, but the idea of like a 20 or a 30 second arcade style loop, the idea that you could be playing a game, a level of a game which you might need to spend 10 minutes getting past this particular level, and you're listening to the same 20 or 30 second loop over and over again. Like, that's my idea of hell. That's why people turn the sound off on their games. And it can be, this is the thing, it can be the most amazing, incredible, even like 2 minute loop. It could be an amazing 2 minute loop that a composer has spent months working on to just make it the most amazing thing of all time. That's great. And it might be something that you'd like to listen to once or five times or even 20 times. But the reality with games is that you're often in these games for hours. So if you don't create music that can be listened to for hours, then all you're really doing is setting up a situation where the player is going to turn it off. So, I got really lucky with some of the ambient sounds in the game. I mean, they come from all over the place, but a number of them came from a friend of mine, Luke Howard, who's a pianist in Melbourne, who he sent me some beautiful solo piano that he'd just recorded at home really early in the process, and basically said to me that open slather, I could just go crazy with the sounds that he sent me. So many of the drones are manipulated, frozen elements that Luke sent me and that other people have sent me or that I've found elsewhere over the years.
Thank you.
it's so cool. Yeah, I was going to ask you about whether you did testing to make sure that the music, as it was, as you were listening to it longer and longer, didn't get boring. I laughed. I read one of the developers say, "Oh yeah, you can get through this game in about 2 hours," and I was like, "Really?" Because I've been stuck on some of those puzzles for about 2 hours, and yet the experience isn't frustrating. It ties my brain in a knot, but listening to the music doesn't add to the frustration. And so it's really brilliant the way that you were able to do that. So did you sit with the game and test out how long you were willing to listen to the music before?
Well, I think when you're making the music, it's pretty hard to be subjective about that. So I know that, I guess, I mean, it's funny how I've never really sat and thought about this, but I guess there are some things about the music in this game and in other games I've worked on which probably help in terms of that repeat listening. I think part of it is not having conventional structures a lot of the time. Like, I mean, these songs are all instrumental, but it's not like they have an A section that leads to a B section that leads to a C section, or a kind of verse chorus bridge emulating pop structure. Like, they tend to just have an organic fluid musical structure where things are just sort of fading from one section to the next, and that every now and then a sound is going to surprise you by appearing in a spot where you didn't necessarily expect it to be, but not in a way that's jarring, just in a way that can kind of just tweak your brain on some level. So I think, like, going into creating the music with that in mind helped. But in terms of testing, I know that the developers were really helpful with that, and Henrik in particular, the lead developer, I would often send him music along the year over the years, and he would put it straight into the game, and they'd be listening to it while they were developing, and the initial feedback on a song might be, "This is perfect, like, don't touch this," and then after a few weeks Henrik might send me a little note saying, "Oh, there's this one high-pitched sound that comes in at about 2 minutes into this loop, and every time it comes on it's just starting to annoy me." So I'll be like, "Okay, well, we'll just get rid of that." little bits of feedback like that were really helpful. Because I think like I said, it's really hard to be objective about that stuff when you're right in the middle of it, making it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why it helps to be working with a team, too, because they hear things that you might have missed or have come up with ways to make it even better.
Yep. And I was really lucky. I think I only really work on games where I feel like I'm on the same page aesthetically with the developers. So again, I feel like I got really lucky with this, Henrik in particular, but the rest of the Voxels team, we all had a shared idea of how this should feel and sound. So they had a lot of trust in me, I think, to just steer the game's kind of sonic signature, I suppose, which was, yeah, I couldn't really work any other way than to just be kind of given that kind of trust. So I was really lucky to work with them. Thank you.
It's great to have that kind of freedom too, to be able to choose the games that you want to work on, the games that really speak to you. And you're able to do that because you've got not one but two radio programs, which is amazing. And something more in particular on Triple J. Do you find that listening, all the listening you do for the show, does that influence your music? Or are there artists that you would love to either work with or that you've kind of incorporated some of their sounds in your music?
It's an interesting question. I guess for me, I've been sort of making music for about 10 years, and I've also been presenting radio for about that long as well. So in a way, all of these things have kind of always existed simultaneously for me. So I've always listened to music. I've always gone searching just to discover new artists, just for my own growth as an artist, and also just for my own kind of joy as a listener. That's just always, ever since I was a teenager, I've been, you know, hustling to find what that new record is, that new band, that new artist, new producer. And then the radio essentially gives me a platform to share those discoveries with other people. So I've always loved doing that. And in terms of the relationship between that listening and my own music, it's just always been in parallel. I know all musicians are kind of different in this respect. I know some artists aren't very... they almost restrict themselves to a narrower palette of musical influences because they, I think, especially some songwriters, I've often had conversations with songwriters where they say whenever they're writing a new album, they actually need to step away from listening because it can influence them too much. They can start to hear themselves parroting their favourite artists rather than trying to find their own voice. Whereas for me, I've just always had this kind of obsessive, voracious appetite for new music. So that's just an activity that runs in parallel with the creation process when I'm working on a game or on my own music. And there's no single artist or single type of music that I can pinpoint as an influence because I I've got this kind of voracious appetite. So it all ends up in there, I think. I'd be completely arrogant to say you can't pick influences in my music. You absolutely can. But yeah, I wouldn't say there's any one standout. And I do hope that in my own way, I find my own voice through that kind of like cornucopia of influences that goes into the pipes, the various pipes, you know?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the pianist that gave you some samples and some beautiful little stems and stuff. Who were some of the other artists, like the trumpeter and the singers that you worked with?
Yeah, well, so essentially this game is going to end up with kind of, in a way, two different soundtracks, because there's the music that's in the game, and then there's the music that's on what will be the soundtrack album, and the album is the ambient trailers you were talking about before. So in terms of some of the collaborators that appear in the game, alongside Luke, there are a couple of levels where another pianist from, she's actually from Brisbane, but she lives in London now, her name is Leah Cardos. She also sent me some kind of piano and synth sounds that really became quite important in a couple of the levels, and also in the very start of the game, some of the elements in the game's introduction sequence come from Leah. And then towards the end of the game, right at the end, I kind of don't want to spoil it too much, but the only kind of vocals that appear in the whole game happen in the climactic end sequence, which you might not be at yet, Kate, from the sounds of it. But yeah. A couple of my really good friends kind of contributed pretty subtle songs, or sort of fragments of songs that form part of this really emotional climax of the game. So a friend of mine from Adelaide called Lonely Speck, who makes incredible kind of wistful, emotional electronic pop music, appears briefly, and then the end credits song is actually written by a very close friend of mine who also I share a studio with in Melbourne, a guy called Ben Abraham, who's a pop songwriter.
One of the things that really struck me about the way that you used those beautiful voices is that you kind of used them as instruments on their own. It's not like a song where the instrumental is kind of like just a background, and it's just such a seamless blend of music and voices.
Yeah, again, I think that was really just about maintaining that feeling of surrealism. And, you know, I think there are a couple of moments where there are some lyrics that sort of try and reflect or hint at the themes in the game, but I just sort of felt like what was more appropriate was just to kind of focus on the feeling or the mood rather than trying to tell any stories. Also kind of resonated with me a little bit, you know, right at the start of the development of the game, Henrik and Voxel Agents had they had a goal in mind that they were going to try and tell this story without using any language in the game itself. So, you know, no kind of talk bubbles appearing, and Arena and Frank don't turn around to you and explain what it is that's going on. And I do love that kind of dedication to simplicity. So I tried to maintain that with the music in the game and also the album that's kind of come together. At the same time, I've just got some friends who are really talented singers, and I kind of sent them the music that was in progress and said, just go nuts, like just have a feeling rather than try and write a song and just record yourself making some noises. So, and the fun part about that was in the process. So essentially the way that the album has turned out is this, it's this grand kind of collaborative tapestry in a way. I was calling them ambient posse cuts because I would get new versions of these songs back from someone or new parts, and then I'd weave them back into a new version of whatever I was working on and then send that to someone else. And so if you listen closely, you can hear some of the singers will be sort of doing a call and response melodically sometimes with parts that have been played on synthesizer or piano or trumpet or other singers. And that all happened organically. I wasn't instructing anyone to do that. It wasn't a compositional thing. It was more just people improvising in the moment, and as they're listening and then when they choose to sing, they're kind of refracting some of those melodies back. I really enjoy that process. That's essentially at the core of how I make music, is that kind of sampling and resampling and reorganizing. So to be able to kind of get all these parts was just an amazing playground for me, and to try and get them to all kind of work together in some organic way makes for, I hope, like I said, a kind of an ambient album experience that doesn't feel boring.
No. No, it doesn't at all. And what's cool about it is that it almost has a kind of an improvised feel to it.
Absolutely.
If there was any way to get everybody at the studio in the studio at the same time, and you with your samples and whatever else you're using to make the sound, it's just kind of a big jam session, which is very, very cool.
Well, and also I don't have any kind of conventional music training, so I can't really, you know, if I want to work with a string section, I can't give them music or anything like that because it's not my background. So I really do, I tend to work with people who have that similar kind of intuitive, explorative approach to me, and that's, I think that kind of results in the kind of music that I make, having that kind of naive or intuitive feeling to it, because it's not, nothing's ever really composed, you know. Like my process of composition is a process of exploration and trial and error and feeling and trying to feel things when I'm putting the music together. And if I'm feeling something, then that's a good sign that I'm on the right track. And I try and follow that. And then at some point, someone will tap me on the shoulder and say, "Tim, you're done. Stop." Sometimes it's, you know, 4 years or whatever it was for this project.
Well, yeah, because you had you had such a long time to work on this. And was there ever a point where the Voxel agent said to you, "Look, you've got this deadline now," or did you always have plenty of time to experiment?
A bit of both. I think, you know, the nature of my input into the game was that I would just pop up every few months, really, so the game would hit a new milestone in development, so a new couple of levels or a change in direction in terms of narrative or aesthetic, and that would be when they would say, "Okay, let's call up Tim, let's see what kind of time he's got." And
that sounds like a great way of working. I know a lot of studios aren't quite that relaxed, so that's really cool.
It was a great luxury. Obviously, as we got closer to deadline this year, there's been a bit more of a need to get things done by certain times. But because we had spent so much time really exploring what the game was meant to feel and sound like in the couple of years leading up to it, it never really felt like we were under, or that I was under pressure this year. I think the developers would tell you a different story. From my perspective, things were pretty, you know, I just got to kind of have fun and make music and throw it at them every now and then. Yeah.
Boy, that sounds awesome. So do you have a release date for the soundtrack?
Yeah, so it will be available for pre-order at the same time that the game is out. So it'll be coming out in officially in the first week of October, I think. But it'll be, as soon as the game is out, the soundtrack will be available for pre-order on Bandcamp and on iTunes. Eventually it'll be everywhere digitally, and looking at plans to do a vinyl release for this as well, because I think that would be really beautiful. So hopefully organize that early in the new year.
Oh, that would be amazing. And it would just be such a great fit with all the stuff that's on the islands, you know, all those, the VHS machine and the ancient Mac and stuff. To have a vinyl would just be so cool. So how can people track you down? You've got these shows on Triple J and you're on social media too, but how can people find out what you're up to?
I am remarkably easy to find. The only challenge really is my name, which can be a bit tricky to spell. But yeah, I mean, with a Google search, you'll quickly discover that I'm everywhere on the internet. I'm on pretty much all of the social medias. And yeah, as you say, I've got these two radio shows in Australia, which keep me occupied and keep me pretty active online. So it's just about, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you can probably read my name in the description or whatever, and from there off you go. It's like I think I years ago gave up on trying to present some sort of easy summary of who it is I am, because I am, you know, I'm a musician and a radio broadcaster. I run a record label. I toured with the band for a few years. There's no short answer. Like when I jump in a taxi or something and the driver says, you know, "So what do you do?" I always have to think for a moment, like, what is it I do today? Every hour it's a different job description. So yeah, I gave up years ago trying to explain that to anyone. It's a fun world to explore, the world of Tim Scheel, and you can just start wherever you want, really.
Well, it has been so much fun talking with you, and I'm in love with the music, and I'm in love with the game, and your music is such a great fit. So thank you so much, Tim, for taking some time to talk about it.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Won't we go?